It is Monday, February 10th, 2014, and from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The Rogers Historical Museum presents Art from the Earth on exhibit now through February 22nd. This exhibit features the museum's own collection of a wide range of pottery used and sometimes made in Arkansas over the centuries. Located in historic downtown Rogers, 621-1154 or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information. Ahead on Ozarks, four legislators from Northwest Arkansas discuss the fiscal session that begins today in Little Rock. They'll examine the chances the private option is or isn't funded by the time lawmakers adjourn. We'll also get a small preview of some of the musicians heading to Fayetteville this summer for the fifth edition of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. First, with legislators gathering today to begin a month-long fiscal session, the fate of some major issues remain unresolved. Foremost in the minds of many, the future of the private option, providing insurance to more than 100,000 low-income residents this year. The plan has so far met and exceeded most projections for cost, demographics, and enrollment, but still has lost some critical votes. Some, like Senate Democratic Minority Leader Keith Ingram, speaking on AETN, think a few changes could regain some support.
We're open to any fresh and new ideas. I think just sitting here, the thing I think is so refreshing is that members of opposite parties are talking about how to fix something and working together.
Even some opponents, like Republican Representative Nate Bell, think reauthorizing funds or at least continuing insurance coverage in some form is a good idea.
If we just defunded this and walked away from those people, frankly, I think it's morally wrong to do that to them. We've got to put ourselves in a position where if the private option goes away, those folks have a path to continuing to have access to health care.
Governor Mike Beebe has been making the case in recent weeks that without the projected $89 million in savings generated by the private option, the state's budget would have to undergo intense and rapid changes to remain budget neutral, as required by state law. We'll hear from some legislators from Northwest Arkansas about the fiscal session in a few minutes on Ozarks at Large. President Barack Obama signed into law a new five-year farm bill last week that's expected to have a major impact on Arkansas, where one in six jobs is tied to agriculture. In his weekly radio address, Governor Mike Beebe discussed some of the major challenges Arkansas farmers are facing.
It's difficult for farmers to avoid risk. Weather, insects, and a myriad of other problems can have a severe effect on a farm's sustainability. In 2012, it was the severe drought that hurt farmers in Arkansas and across most of the country.
The governor says smaller, family-owned farms especially feel the difficulties that are facing the agriculture industry. The city of Springdale is ready for winter weather that could potentially move into northwest Arkansas tonight. Sam Goad, the city's public works director, says the city has used about 400 tons each of salt and grit, 500 gallons of liquid chloride, and 200 gallons of beet juice so far this winter. Though the city has replenished all of its materials for removing ice from the city streets, Goad says Springdale, like many cities in the central United States, is facing a short supply of plow blades.
This has been such a winter for the United States, especially in the central part and up in north central area, that the demand for plow blades has started to really have an impact on suppliers. We here in Springdale have enough blades in stock to get us through the rest of the winter, and of course we're reordering and have reordered already to get those in, but orders for plow blades normally would come in a timely manner, and now there's a back order on those.
Goad says during a typical winter, the city goes through a couple of sets of blades, but greater amounts of frozen precipitation this winter means crews have had to plow closer to the pavement, which causes more wear and tear on the blades. Goad says the Public Works Department budget has already taken a hit because of this winter. He says money has been reallocated to purchase new equipment and to build a material storage facility for the salt and grit used on the streets.
The money that was moved around, $300,000, would have gone to asphalt repairs and overlay of streets. Fortunately, we do have funding available to accomplish the necessary goals that we have this year. We're also very fortunate that we're at the very beginning part of the state's have sent sales tax that we will, as the public, will be paying for the next 10 years.
Springdale's portion of highway tax proceeds will be $1.2 million. He says the tax revenue has given the city something of a buffer to allow the Public Works Department to make long-range improvements to equipment and facilities in order to better handle winter weather in the future. Delaware-based Sager Creek Acquisition Corporation bought Siloam Springs-based Allen's Canning in a bankruptcy auction last week. According to the City Wire, the recently formed Sager Creek agreed to pay nearly $124.8 million for the majority of Allen's assets, but that price could go up or down depending on other pending claims against Allen's and including a court-mandated $3 million breakup fee. The sale must be approved by the bankruptcy court in a hearing set for tomorrow in Fayetteville. The Arkansas women's basketball team lost on the road yesterday to nationally ranked South Carolina, 67-49. The loss makes the team 16-8 on the year, 3-8 in SEC play. The Razorbacks return home to host Alabama Thursday night. Cloudy, a 40% chance of snow and a low of 13, wind chills as low as 5 in northwest Arkansas tonight. In the Arkansas River Valley tonight, 70% chance of snow, accumulations of 1 to 3 inches possible, a low around 21. Tomorrow, partly sunny, highs of 30, but a wind chill as low as 4 in northwest Arkansas. Tomorrow for the River Valley, 30% chance of snow before noon, highs in the lower to mid 30s. And for tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, lows ranging from 15 to 20. This is Ozarks at Large. The fiscal session of the Arkansas legislature opened today, and most attention leading up to the first rap of the gavel has been paid to the refunding of the private option. The bipartisan adaptation of paying for health care passed last year in the State House and State Senate by the slimmest of margins. Late last week, four Northwest Arkansas members of the legislature gathered inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio to discuss the session. We asked Senators Uvalde Lindsay and Bart Hester, a Democrat and Republican respectively, and State Representatives Charlie Collins and Greg Letting from the GOP and Democratic Party respectively, to sit down for a conversation. Representative Collins says he thinks it's much too early to know exactly what will be the private option's fate.
And in my view, it's just too early to start counting votes because we don't yet know exactly what we're voting on. The reason I say that is last time we took the facts on the ground, we assessed our options, and we wrote what I believe was the best plan of any state in the United States to deal with this horrific law, Obamacare. And in my view, what we passed, given the information we had at the time, was the best plan possible. The difference is we're into this plan, it's just getting started, and there's a lot more information. So, for example, what is the budget hit? Let's understand $89 million. Is that the right number or not? What is the uncompensated care hit? Our understanding that the latest numbers being thrown out are that the private option saves hospitals in Arkansas $200 million per year in uncompensated care. Is that right or wrong? And number three, if we don't do the private option, the numbers I had from before said that Obama was going to stick us with a 30% share on more Medicaid enrollees called the Woodwork effect, which would add another $110 million to our budget. So if those numbers are true and we're going to hammer Arkansans with $400 million in incremental expenses if we defund the private option, to me, that's a big problem and a big challenge. But I don't know yet if those numbers have been vetted.
Anyone else want to step in?
Yeah, I'll go.
Senator Hester?
Yeah, I think I'm the only one sitting in the room that voted against the private option last time, and I fully expect that I'll be voting no for the appropriation. I think it's a very different vote this time than it was in session. In session, it was about policy. This time, it's about funding. Typically, the appropriation doesn't create a fight like is going on right now. But I think even in my shoes, somebody that's sitting here as a no, it's very different in that it's not just that, the private option. We're talking about the whole DHS budget, which includes, you know, board payments for foster families and foster kids, and that's something that's very near and dear to my heart. I think that's very important. And we certainly don't want to set a precedence of shutting down policy on appropriations. I certainly hope that Asa Hutchinson's going to be governor next year, and we don't want to set a precedence of dealing with policy through appropriation.
Greg?
I would agree with Representative Collins that it is too early to be counting votes, and also that the private option was a terrific compromise and a very innovative compromise, and it's something that other states are considering doing. If vote counting at this point has a purpose, I think it would be to judge just what kind of changes and to what extent changes need to be made to the existing law. I think everybody would agree that if the private option is funded again in this fiscal session, there are going to be some changes. And those discussions have been taking place and are going to really heat up once we all get down to Little Rock.
Senator Lindsey?
I think that this session is going to be about a little bit of trust level. Do we trust the numbers? Are they the right numbers? I've looked at Governor Beebe's budget, and it appears to be sound to me. The $89 million in uncompensated care savings that he's laid out are pretty well detailed in the information that's been given to us from the Department of Finance Administration and from their budget folks. There's obviously, might question that, but I do think there'll be some changes in all probability to the underlying enabling legislation at some point in time. Health savings accounts are prominently mentioned by some in the Senate, and there is no doubt but what that will get some airing for change. That makes the private option a little more palatable. Some deductions and copays are being talked about. But I'm concerned that we get in there and we fight over the dollars again, and we end up with one or two votes short, and then the entire budget is at risk. And that is a calamity that the state of Arkansas cannot exist with.
Governor Beebe has mentioned that he foresees an $89 million hit to the budget. Some of you have mentioned whether those numbers are right. I'm interested, when do you hit that trust that you think those numbers are right? And if they are, where would that $89 million, what would happen to the budget then?
Well, I'll say right now, if you look at our current fiscal budget, we're $40 million in surplus. So that would take care of half that issue right off the bat. We have a surplus left over from the year preceding that as well. I think we certainly have the funding in the state to take care of those issues. My concern would be, do we take an $89 million hit one time, or with adding all these extra people to Medicaid, do we take an $89 million hit a year in perpetuity? So I'd rather take it one time.
Anybody else?
On the other side of that coin, you've got the opportunity over the next 3 to 6 years for the state of Arkansas to gain, if the numbers are projected to be right, and I believe they are, the state can gain between $600 and $700 million in extra federal reimbursement rates because of the difference in 70% match and a 90% match at the worst, 100% for the first 3 years. That generates $600 million in new revenue that goes a long way toward making this a package that makes good dollars and cents in addition to making good common sense of needing to take care of folks that need help the most.
The challenge for me is I want to repeal Obamacare, but the only things we're able to work on are the parts that come after he's taken all our money. So the core elements of Obamacare are, number one, cut reimbursements to Medicare, that's health care for seniors in Arkansas, by over $500 million a year. Number two, increase taxes on Arkansans beginning in 2014 by over $500 million a year. So step one of Obamacare is ship $1 billion out of Arkansas to Obama in D.C. And then we start the discussion. And if we don't do the private option, my understanding is the feds will put people on Medicaid through what's called the Woodwork effect, who would otherwise qualify for the old Medicaid program. And our 30% share of that is $110 million a year in perpetuity. To avoid that, we go with the private option. Now, instead of being on a broken government program these low-income folks are on private insurance like everybody else. And when we eventually pay our full 10% boat on that in 2020, using today's number of $915 million, that would be a $91 million hit. Let's round it up to 100. Let's round it up to the $110 million. What we're really saying is pay me $110 million a year starting now to do Obamacare Obama's way, or in 2020, pay me $100 million when we're paying our 10% share of the private option. To me, fiscally, that's a huge good deal for Arkansas.
Representative Letting?
I think, again, that the private option is a very innovative approach to a law that is widely unpopular, particularly here in the state of Arkansas. I would point out that recent polls do show that while a majority of Americans aren't happy with the Affordable Care Act, a majority of them favor fixing the current law rather than repealing the law. I think what we've done here in Arkansas is the right thing for our people and for our state, and I'm confident that at the end of the day, political reality is going to set in during the fiscal session, and the idea of taking health care for more than 100,000 low-income Arkansans, many of whom now have health insurance for the first time in their lives, it's just going to be something that we realize we just cannot do.
Moving beyond the private option, what else do you think will be discussed, or do you think anything else will be discussed beginning February 10th in this fiscal session? And I'll start with you, Senator Lindsey.
Well, obviously, the governor is proposing to open 300 beds, new prison beds, to alleviate the overcrowding in county jails. There's between $3 and $5 million set aside to provide operation and maintenance. Those beds are already in place. The capital cost has already been there, but we haven't had the funding to provide folks to run the prison system in that particular area. I think that will get some discussion. It'll be tied up in this, and additionally with that, there's $7 million in new money going to reimburse the counties for housing state prisoners. That is, as we all know, the reimbursement rate that Washington County gets, for example, is $28, but it costs about $60, a little over, to take care of that prisoner. So the county is compensating, if you will, or underwriting a lot of the prison care of this state. That $7 million is going to be in discussion, I am sure, along with this whole process of what do you do with private option. Is the savings there? But if their savings are there, that $89 million, then that frees up money to take care of those other things that are there.
Senator Hester, do you expect to see anything else come up?
Well, no, I like that Senator Lindsey brought up the prison beds. You know, we changed a lot of policy this past year and people on probation, you know, and holding them accountable to honoring their probation requirements. And I just feel like if we are going to say, hey, we're going to hold you accountable, then we need to make sure that we've got the prisons and the funding there to take care of that. So I'm absolutely going to support that funding. I think we all know that we've got an open lieutenant governor seat. And with that, we're looking at passing a bill that doesn't require the governor to hold a special election that could cost between $1 to $2 million. I think the governor's on board with that, and I certainly am.
Let's go across the Capitol to the House of Representatives. Representative Letting?
The bill that Senator Hester mentioned, I think, is absolutely a real possibility. I do believe the votes are there to avoid a special election. Given that it is an election year, that seat will be filled in 10 months anyway. A statewide special election could be rather costly and also potentially confusing depending on the timing. If it were held in May when we're going to have the regular primary, I think it could create a confusing situation for voters.
I think there's one more piece of legislation that may come up. If you recall, this past summer, the Attorney General gave a ruling that questioned what the Private Security Board was allowing schools to do in Arkansas with regard to arming people on school staffs by getting them a private security authorization. And then the board came back and basically said, we're going to kind of grandfather the folks that have been doing it. We're going to go and hold off on doing any more. And the expectation is that the legislature might clarify the law so that everybody can be on solid ground. I know Senator Hutchinson has had hearings at least once or twice on that, and it wouldn't surprise me if something to clarify that situation came up as well.
I know there are two people in this room who would love to see more Democrats in either chamber, two that would love to see more Republicans. But right now, and this is unique in Arkansas's history, that it is as evenly divided and as close as it has ever been, the two parties, means, I'm assuming, tell me if I'm wrong, means you have to be across party lines somewhat civil to each other to get anything done. There has to be spirit of compromise. Am I oversimplifying? Or was that the feeling last year?
I don't think so. I mean, I for one, think that civility should always be a part of the political process. But I do think we do a much better job in Little Rock of working across the aisle. Even at times, you know, in this past session, there were times where I might be actively trying to defeat a senator's legislation in the House, but that senator is carrying my legislation in the Senate. It is absolutely a unique working environment, but I think everybody, for the most part, does a great job of working across the aisle.
Well, one thing I always like to say about Arkansas is we're certainly not Washington, D.C., and if you put all 135 legislators together, all 135, I'd say 8 out of 10 questions are going to be about the same. And so we get along. There's very few issues that are really divisive, but those issues are divisive. But for the most part, I do pride myself in thinking that we're not Washington, D.C., and even though I'm going to be a note on this private option, I'll spin back to there, you know, I really think we're going to work out a compromise. The last thing that I want to see is a government shutdown or defunding of DHS. I mean, I'll do all that I can to avoid that.
So you do think that eventually – I'm just picking on you since you're the one of the four.
Sure.
Here. You do think there will be a compromise that can be reached?
Well, I think you almost have to. I mean, defunding of DHS is not a good plan. I mean, am I willing to do that? Yes. Do I want to do that? Absolutely no. So, you know, there's going to be 8 or 9 of us that are voting no. We're looking for somebody to find out if there's a compromise, maybe a policy change, maybe something else that can get somebody on board.
I think there's a great distinction between debating policy and being disagreeable with each other as people. And one of the things I think we do pretty well in Arkansas is as we get to know each other, we understand and respect what each of us is good at. And those things tend to be a little different. I was kind of joking a little bit before you sat down, Kyle, that when it comes to the rules and the budget, I trust Senator Lindsey's judgment about what the rules and the budget say as well as anybody's because I think he knows it as well as anybody. And I could say the same thing for Representative Letting on different areas or Senator Hester on further areas still. So debating what is the right way to move our state forward and improve the quality of life for all our Kansans, I think, is a combined goal, but we do have different ideas on the right policies to do it.
I think while we may disagree a little bit about policy and some direction that we would like to take, there is always the element of working together because we must work together to get anything done. Good things for the people of this state require us to work together, and I don't think any of us are sent to Little Rock to be negative or to be saying no all the time to all pieces of legislation. I think we're sent there to do the best for the people of this state. And that's a pressing order and a high requirement. And I think if there is conflict, it's not conflict between party as much as it is conflict between urban and rural. Because the policy issues, what you need to have for your region and where you live and your constituents is different, whether you live in a rural area or whether you live in an urban area. And that's becoming more pronounced as we go along.
Senator Lindsey, I want to ask you, because you've been representing people from this part of the state for a while, both in chambers. You were serving before when we truly had a biennial legislature. When we didn't have a fiscal session. Now that this will be our third one that the voters approve that every year, but every other year is a fiscal year. Do you think it's working?
Kyle, I think it is working. It's a work in process, though, because, like you say, it's the third fiscal session we've had. It allows you to fine-tune the budget. It's difficult. You're looking at a $5 million general revenue budget, or $5 billion, excuse me, with zeros. $5 billion general revenue budget, which is basically sales tax and income tax generated. But it's a $25 to $30 billion budget overall when you add the federal monies and the special revenues and the highway department and everything else in it. It's impossible for any organization to be able to fine-tune its budget and carry it forward for two full years without some adjustments. And that's what fiscal sessions were designed to do in a short 30-day period with a possibility of extension for another 15 days. I think the fiscal session is a good thing right now.
A couple of minutes left. Is there anything any of the four of you want to mention or say before we close this?
Yeah, I'd say on the fiscal session, I think it's important to note that, like, if we did not have the fiscal session and an issue like the Lieutenant Governor's office coming open, I believe we would end up having a special election before we had a special session to do that. So I think it's a good thing that we are coming back together, that we can address surprise issues like that and take care of them.
Senator Bart Hester, Senator Uvalde Lindsay, Representative Greg Letting, and Representative Charlie Collins all represent districts in Northwest Arkansas. They talked to me inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio late last week. The fiscal session of the Arkansas Legislature opened today. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, more about health care. We'll hear two views on what kind of health care should be expected in this country. It's an excerpt from a panel discussion held last week on the University of Arkansas campus. That's on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Artificial intelligence. Could it evolve to the point where people form romantic attachments to their apps? Well, some of us are already quite attached to our technology.
Hi, Laura. What can I do for you?
Siri, I love you.
You hardly know me.
Falling for an algorithm. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen this afternoon from 3 to 6 to KUAF 91.3 FM.
This weekend, the organizers of the Fayetteville Roots Festival officially announced Lucinda Williams would headline the Saturday night edition of the summer festival. In about 15 minutes, we'll hear about some of the others signed up for this August.
He gave this interview and he acknowledged that. He said, I was in Fayetteville playing this festival, and here's how it went.
A preview of the fifth edition of the Fayetteville Roots Festival ahead on Ozarks at Large. But before we look ahead, we'll take a look back as Roby Brock from Talk Business Arkansas has the top stories from Arkansas politics and business from the past week.
The University of Arkansas Walton College of Business inducted four new members in the state's Business Hall of Fame. This year's inductees include advertising executive James Faulkner, international businessman Mac McLarty, farmer and lawyer Stanley Reed, and poultry magnate Mark Simmons. We've got profiles of all four men at talkbusiness.net. Governor Mike Beebe said this week there are a multiplicity of reasons Arkansas legislators should vote to fund Arkansas's private option plan. Beebe said Arkansas businesses are estimated to save $38 million a year by not having to pay penalties under the federal health care law as a result of the private option. Also, private option funding helps Arkansas hospitals, especially rural medical operations, Beebe said. He predicted the upcoming vote in the fiscal session will be a close vote, but he believes legislators will ultimately deal with logic and money and set aside ideology as they decide the private option's fate. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Mike Ross proposed a major overhaul of the state's personal income tax structure on Wednesday. He said the plan would have to be phased in over time as allowed by state's finances. The total price tag of the restructuring would cost an estimated $575 million. The crux of Ross's plan would be to retroactively index Arkansas income tax brackets. Ross's likely Republican rival, Asa Hutchinson, said the plan was not serious. Last November, Hutchinson proposed a $100 million tax reform proposal. Oaklawn and Southland saw double-digit spikes in their overall electronic games of skill wagers in 2013. EGS wagers include gambling spent on video blackjack and poker, as well as slot machines and other casino-style games. The latest statistics showed Oaklawn topping the $1 billion hurdle in those wagers in 2013, and Southland's gambling wagers cleared $2 billion. Combined, electronic games of skill wagers between the two racetracks was $3.2 billion for the full year. Arkansas tax revenues held up year-to-date, but sluggish sales collections in January were an ominous sign. For the first 7 months of the state's fiscal year, gross revenue totaled $3.4 billion. That's up about 2.1% above last year, and it is above forecast. Sales and use taxes represented the major drag on collections in January, said state economist John Shelnut. Van Buren-based USA Truck and Knight Transportation of Phoenix have settled litigation related to Knight's attempted hostile takeover bid. Knight went public on September 26 with a $9 per share bid for USA Truck, but it was rejected. USA Truck sued Knight, claiming it improperly used USA Truck's confidential information to begin a creeping hostile acquisition. Terms of the settlement were not disclosed, but both firms issued positive statements regarding the legal move. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. It is Monday, February 10th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So have you gotten Laura's Valentine yet?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Well, at least there's a yes part in there.
Yeah.
Because I hate to see men have to push the dogs out of the dog houses. All this week.
Although, where my dogs sleep?
It's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, okay, the couch.
Yeah, well.
That's not preferable, but.
My dogs sleep in the bed, so, you know, it's not like the doghouse there is a bad thing. But if you want to stay out of the proverbial doghouse, all week we will have Valentine's Day events. And today's for tomorrow, for Tuesday, are a Valentine workshop at the Bella Vista Public Library from 9 to 5. You don't even have to spend any money, guys.
Just show up.
Go by the library and make a homemade Valentine, and she'll think that's so romantic.
She will. And... let's just say that it can work the other way.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We're not bashing men. It's just that women usually start telling you 2 weeks before what they want. So there is a sweetheart tea party for ages 3 to 5 at 4 o'clock tomorrow at the Fayetteville Public Library. Mm-hmm. Register online at faylib.org.
Also free?
Also free. There is an anti-Valentine's Day party for grades 7 to 12 at 4:30 at the Bentonville Public Library tomorrow.
Free?
Free. And a classic romance film festival. And tomorrow they are showing Roman Holiday.
Audrey Hepburn.
At 6:30 at the Miller Branch Library in Fort Smith. And again, it is
free.
So look how much I've helped you. And those, honey, let's go to a movie.
And that film festival continues through the month.
Yes, it does.
Once a week. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Born March 14, 1914, Lee Hayes was a singer and writer who gained his greatest fame in the Weavers, with that folk group being blacklisted in the 1950s and their music being branded as subversive and un-American. Lee's grandfather had settled the Hayes family in Cato, Arkansas in the 1880s. Lee was born in Little Rock, but with his father, a Methodist preacher, Lee had lived in Newport, Paragould, and elsewhere in the state before his father died in a car accident outside Boonville in 1927. When Hayes was only 13. His mother had a breakdown soon after, and Lee, the youngest sibling, was essentially cast adrift. In 1930, Lee's brother Reuben helped him find a job at the public library in Cleveland, Ohio, and the 16-year-old's informal education began. Every book that was considered unfit for children to read was marked with a black rubber stamp, Lee recalled later. So I'd go through the stacks and look for these black stamps. Hayes stayed at the library until 1934, the longest time he would ever hold a single job. He returned to Arkansas. Lee had heard of a Presbyterian preacher in Logan County, Claude Williams, who had been organizing miners and sharecroppers in the area, both black and white.
Hayes himself enrolled in the nearby College of the Ozarks, studying the ministry for about a year. Hayes stayed under the wing of Williams through the 1930s. Even as Williams had to leave his parents' church, was beaten by police and union busters in Fort Smith, and moved to Little Rock. Lee Hayes worked with two of the state's best-known so-called radical organizations of the era, the Southern Tenant Farmers Union, organized in Tyrone's in the mid-1930s, and Commonwealth College in Polk County. Founded through the American Socialist Movement that gained momentum through World War I, Commonwealth College was originally located in Polk County's Inc., then Mena, and finally on a farm 12 miles outside of Mena. Beyond its curriculum, those from the college advocated for coal miners in western Arkansas and sharecroppers in eastern Arkansas. Notable Commonwealth College attendees included longtime Arkansas Governor Orville Faubus. Lee Hayes' uncle, folklorist Vance Randolph, was among those in the state's liberal community with ties to the college. And in 1937, Hayes' former mentor, Claude Williams, was made director. Lee soon joined the faculty. Especially at Commonwealth, Lee honed his songwriting skills and his bass singing voice. In 1940, Lee Hayes left Arkansas for New York to further his political causes, already armed with songs about the cause of the worker. There, Hayes met a compatriot, Pete Seeger, who Hayes would collaborate with for decades. Through the early 1940s, Hayes, Seeger, and Woody Guthrie, as part of the Almanac Singers, toured college campuses and union rallies. Guthrie nicknamed Hayes Arkansas Hard Luck Lee. Lee Hayes didn't play an instrument, but was skilled at writing and adapting songs from hymn books and the like to fit their messages. Unlike the music of the Weavers, the Almanac Singers did sing songs about unions, politics, and pacifism. But the success of the Weavers in the late 1940s and early 1950s attracted more attention in the McCarthy era. The group's first single, Goodnight Irene, hit the charts a few weeks after its composer, Leadbelly, died. As the group kept hitting the charts and selling out concerts, the Weavers found themselves under increased scrutiny and eventually blacklisted. Its members were called in to testify before the House Un-American Activities Committee. Songs are dangerous, Lee Hayes once commented. His government apparently agreed. I'll see you in my dream. If I had a hammer, I'd a hammer in the morning. One of Lee Hayes' most enduring compositions is If I Had a Hammer, co-written with Pete Seeger at a union rally. It's been recorded by many and is heard here by Peter, Paul, and Mary, who helped popularize the song. Sporadically, Lee Hayes also had short stories and poems published, but remained best known for being one of the Weavers. Hayes lived simply off his royalties from songs like If I Had a Hammer and Kisses Sweeter Than Wine through the 1960s and 1970s. One project he did go for was a small part as a preacher in the Arthur Penn-directed 1968 film Alice's Restaurant, starring and based on the song by Arlo Guthrie, his old friend Woody's son.
Love between my brothers.
Despite successful recordings and reunion concerts, the Weavers never really recovered from their blacklisting. By the late 1970s, Hayes had two legs amputated due to diabetes and a pacemaker. But a final reunion concert at New York's Carnegie Hall was staged and filmed by a documentary crew in October 1980. Lee Hayes died August 26, 1981, having seen his blacklisting go from a source of shame to a badge of honor. Here in its entirety is The Wreck of the John B. by the Weavers, featuring Lee Hayes of Little Rock.
We've come on the sloop John B., my grandfather and me. Round Nassau town we did roam, drinking all night. We got into a fight. I feel so break up, I want to go home. So heist up the John B. sails, see how the mainsail's set. Send for the captain ashore, let me go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home. I feel so break up, I want to go home. First mate, he got drunk, broke up the people's trunk. Constable had to come and take him away. Sheriff John Stone, please let me alone. I feel so break up, I want to go home. So heist up the John B. sails, see how the mainsail's set. Send for the captain ashore, let me go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home. I feel so break up, I want to go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home.
Let me go home. I feel so break up, I want to go home.
The Weavers, featuring Lee Hayes of Little Rock, with the song he co-wrote, The Wreck of the John B. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
For more information about Arkansongs, visit arkansongs.org. Arkansongs is a production of KUAR-FM in Little Rock.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Brian Hembree, who is one of the organizers of the annual Roots Festival, which will enjoy its fifth year in August, correct?
That is correct.
Which is what? We're about halfway between the last one and the next one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's just under 7 months away.
So you know the complete schedule.
Not the complete schedule yet, but I've got a macro level view, kind of mapped out, and we've got a lot of the groundwork laid for the coming year.
Now, last week, when many people were home from school or home from work or both, you started this thing on Facebook, kind of a Wheel of Fortune.
Yes.
For every so many likes, you'd reveal a letter. And we now know some of the people who are going to be here.
That's right. Yeah, that was I think I was bored at home just like everyone else, and I do a lot of the graphic design for the fest, and so I had been building this initial lineup poster that we've put out, and every time I would be on the trail of a new artist, I'd add them on there, and then maybe that didn't work out, and I'd take them off, and it was this kind of give and take graphic design, which I don't recommend, but it got me thinking, oh, wow, I've looked at this in 400 different versions, I feel like, and so it might be interesting just to release this as a Wheel of Fortune style, you know the number of letters, and then we'll figure it out from there, and it turned out to be a lot of fun. We were all snowed in, and I had a lot of feedback from people that they enjoyed it.
Daryl Scott and Tim O'Brien.
That's right. They were really the first call that I made. You know, Daryl Scott gave an interview a couple months ago to CMT, and they were asking him about their new album that they did together. And this is the second, really the third album that they've worked on together, but the second Daryl and Tim album. And on this new album, they put a version of Paradise with John Prine on the album. And I was backstage in 2012 when he asked John Prine if he could record that tune. I didn't know that he asked John Prine to record that tune with them, but this was directly after he had joined John on stage, you know, to do that as their finale. And it was really one of my favorite moments of the entire fest any year. But he gave this interview and he acknowledged that. He said, I was in Fayetteville playing this festival, and here's how it went. And, you know, I felt endeared to him the moment he stepped on one of our stages, and I've loved his music for years, but we feel like, you know, they are kind of endeared to us too, and we love Tim O'Brien, and we feel like the two of them as a duo is just a dream come true of an act.
I was in the wings that night, and John Prine was finishing up, and Daryl was back there. Mandolin? Did he have?
He had a bouzouki.
Bouzouki,
yeah.
Right.
Or an octave mandolin, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was walking around making sure he had it right. And he kind of looked at me and just kind of went, like, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And they,
of
course, it was splendid.
Best
brought
I can,
down the house.
It was. It was incredible. It was one of those magical moments that, you know, you do all this planning, hope that something like that happens. You don't know if it will. But it was definitely magic. But best I can tell, that's the first time they'd ever done that. and I think the idea is that a lot of artists have had that opportunity. You know, they've been on a bill with John Prine, and then they're hoping that they, you know, he says, hey, will you do this with me? And it just happened to be Daryl that night. And Daryl's sensibilities, you know, with his, you know, upbringing in Kentucky and Prine's connection to Kentucky, it just really works. And then, you know, they had this song that was nominated for a Grammy this year, you know, Leave Your Dirty Lights On. It was just almost like a follow-up to Paradise. You know, it's the postmodern Paradise. It's great.
Well, my daddy came from coal dust. And me, I'm about the same. If you read King Cole's ledger book, then you've seen my family name. It used to take a camp of miners to load their train and go. Now there's four in my crew, and we do what we do to keep your dirty lights on. Your dirty lights on, keep your dirty lights on. If you got money in your pocket and a switch on the wall, we'll keep your dirty lights on.
Uncle Tupelo Sunvolt fans are very happy. Jay Farrar?
Jay Farrar.
Wow.
Yeah. One of my favorite songwriters, period. I mean, just someone that I respect greatly. I mean, he's multifaceted. If you go back to Uncle Tupelo, if all he'd ever done was be an Uncle Tupelo and, you know, share the songwriting duties with Jeff Tweedy, that's in itself amazing. When I was coming up and really cutting my teeth in rock and roll, Sunvolt, that album was, Trace, was just incredible. And then what he's done after that has been, you know, equally important in kind of in my songwriting book, so to speak. And the album that he put out about a year and a half ago called New Multitudes, which was the collection of Woody Guthrie lyrics that he and Jim James and a bunch of other artists contributed to, some of his finest work, in my opinion. So I'm just thrilled. I feel like Jay Farrar is just a dream come true, and he's coming with a sidey, and so it's going to be a duo, and I know it'll be dynamic.
Anais Mitchell?
Yep, that's right. Anais Mitchell is just...
Anais. Yeah.
Yes, Anais. Anais. I mean, it goes both ways. You know, regardless, I mean, I feel the same way about as dynamic a female songwriter as I've heard. And, you know, she just came through town supporting Patty Griffin. And, you know, when Patty Griffin tags you to be, you know, her opening act, that's a pretty big deal. And, you know, she's going to come back and on an even bigger stage, and I know she'll impress. And, you know, it's one of those things where you know, she's also multifaceted, and it's the varied things that she's done that's so dynamic to me. I mean, she put out a folk opera called Hadestown. You know, she's put out great albums with bands. She just about a year and a half ago released a duo album with Jefferson Hamer and of the Child's Ballads in this collection of British folk tunes.
The king has been appeased.
prisoner and a prisoner long in Spain. And Willie of the Wednesbury has lain long with his daughter Jane. What ails you, what ails you, my daughter Jane? Why you look so pale and wan? Oh, have you had any ill sickness? Or yet been sleeping with a man? I have not had any ill sickness, nor yet been sleeping with a man. It is for you, my father dear, for biding so long in Spain.
And now she's got a solo album coming out in August that'll be out when she's here. And so I just look at that, and I love artists that do that, you know, that collaborate on multiple levels and that write great songs.
And more to come.
And many more.
We haven't talked about everyone you've announced. You can go to the website.
That's right, FayettevilleRoots.com.
And tickets are now available.
That's
in
right.
Packages.
Last Friday at 9 a.m., we open up early bird packages. There are three packages available. Those are going to be available for about 3 or 4 weeks in early bird pricing, and then they'll go up to the next tier of pricing. We think we've made the early bird very attractive. They're in limited numbers, and they've already been selling pretty well. So we've seen some strong interest.
And let's see, at least 10 stages again.
That's right.
Many of them free.
That's right. And, you know, one of the things that we feel is such a big part of the Fayetteville Roots Festival is how strongly it's rooted in the community. So if we're going to have a ticketed stage, we feel it's important to have a free stage as well. And so, you know, we look to our stages at the Fayetteville Public Library, the live broadcast with Ozarks at Large, the kids programming we do at the library, the free stage we do at the Farmers Market. We look to those as equal as the main stage that's going to happen. So, I mean, it really all goes hand in hand, and it all dovetails together in a way that we think is critical.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Kyle.
Brian Hembree is one of the organizers of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. This weekend, the festival's Saturday headliner was announced. It will be Lucinda Williams. The festival takes place in Fayetteville in August. One more musical note. Today is the first day of voting for finalists in the Song of Arkansas contest that was launched in late November and is sponsored by the Department of Arkansas Parks and Tourism. More than 230 people submitted original songs that they wanted to be connected to the state. Now we're down to 7 finalists. Voting began today and will run at the Arkansas.com website through February 24th. The winner will be announced Monday, March 3rd. The musician will perform at the 40th Annual Arkansas Governor's Conference on Tourism to be held in Rogers on March 10th. The winner also receives a recording session and a taping of the video of their entry, along with $2,000. At least 5 of the 7 finalists have connections to our part of the state. Barrett Baber and Candy Lee, who have both been on Ozarks at Large, live in Fayetteville. Matt Noble is a Bentonville resident. Shauna Kaler works in Mount Ida, and Jeremy Huddleston, who now lives in Southern California, was born and grew up in Russellville. Again, you can learn more about all 7 of the finalists and hear all 7 of the songs and vote at Arkansas.com. We'll have more about this contest later this week on Ozarks at Large. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Pea Ridge. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow at noon for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Don't forget, you can hear past shows, or if you'd like to hear something else from this edition of Ozarks at Large, you can go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.